Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening this Friday, 13th of December, Brandalismos. Welcome to Brandalismos. Episode of Brandalismos last month in the second Friday, we're with Nicholas Campion, History of Western Astrology, and this pretty much episode we follow the next chapter, and it's Egypt, the stars and the soul. Hereditary Prince and Count, Soul Companion, wise in the sacred writing, who observes everything observable in heaven and earth, clear-eyed in observing the stars. Egyptian sky was at one with the land, and life on earth flourished all the more if it was harmonized with life in the heavens. The belief that the Egyptians did not possess a precise mathematical astronomy in the modern sense is strictly correct, but misses the point that the sky provided a set of visual images which provided meaning for life on earth, as well as a series of structures and living beings, which enable auspicious moments of time to be identified, the states to be managed, and souls to travel through space. Such division of the sky were to be managed and souls to travel through space, both particular and imbued with numinous significance. The whole sky was generally known to us by the Greek word Deken, though they were known to early Egyptologists as diagonal calendars, or more properly, star clocks. These were used to record the time, a critical process if not nocturnal. Religious rituals were to be conducted at the divinely sanctioned moments. They make their appearance in drawings and texts on 12 coffin lids surviving from the 10th dynasty onward before 2010 BCE, perhaps by 2400 BCE, and may have been the result of deliberate invention similar to the Old Kingdom calendar's reform rather than a long evolution. What we find are 36 constellations listed graphically in 36 columns and 12 lines each, arranged in diagonals. Detailed illustrations of the decans also appear on astronomical sailings of synods around 1473 BCE and the pharaoh Seti I around 1300 BCE and Ramses IV around 1170 BCE, and were recently discovered on the Ptolemaic monuments excavated in the Mediterranean of Alexandria. Each of the decans, probably beginning with Sirius, was invisible for 70 days and was given a 10-day period of a special duat. To reduce the decans to maritime keepers is too obscure their significance, though, and there is no reason to doubt the literal claim that a star dies and death and resurrection. The star dies and star lives every 10 days to measure time was to observe the endless drama of death and resurrection, of life and immortality, the endlessly alternating triumph of darkness and light. Collectively, they appear to have been arranged in a band which appears to have been just south of the ecliptic, the sun's apparent path through the sky. Thus, they were led by Isis, who was associated with Sirius, on the path set out by Re. There were 12 decans visible in the course of one night. The origin of our 12 hours. In all of the texts, none of which survives from earlier than the New Kingdom, which documents the song nocturnal journey through the spatial, through the duet. The duet, it is divided into 12 regions, and it is tempting to speculate that it is a spatial analog of the 12 month years. In this sense, the decans have been compared to a Christian Advent calendar, marking the time until the triumphant reappearance of Sirius. These are reasonable assumptions, although the texts do not tell us this. The earliest reference to hours occurs in the very first pyramid text from Unas Pyramid, in which we are told that the sun clears the night and dispatches the hours. It is likely that the decan system evolved from direct observations of stellar risings to a more systematized measurement of equal periods hinted at in the tomb of the official Amenemhat in the reign of Amenhotep I, 1545-1525 BCE, who has been called the first astronomer we can name in ancient Egypt. Certainly, we know that mechanical clocks were being invented. The early surviving water clock that dates from the reign of Amenhotep III. One outstanding question is the extent to which Egyptian astronomy was influenced by other Near Eastern cultures. The problem, though, may be a consequence of the sheer lack of source material. It is inconceivable that the Egyptian priests had no access in the second millennium to the knowledge and system of Mesopotamia, and the use of 36 stars by both cultures suggests a common origin in the third millennium or earlier. It is just not realistic to assume that cultures which traded in artifacts never came into contact with each other's ideas. The Greeks were later to borrow 12-hour nights from the Egyptian sexagesimal counting from the Babylonians and bequeath us our modern days of 24-60-minute hours. It seems likely that the 36 seconds may have been represented especially in the Egyptian state, as well as in the sky. In the 5th century, the Greek historian Herodotus tells us that Egyptian Mediterranean coast was exactly 3,600 stades, 420 miles in length. Herodotus also tells us that during the reign of the 12 kings, a memorial had been constructed featuring a sacred lake, Lake Moeris, the circumference of which was 3,600 stades. The lake was positioned next to the labyrinth of 12 covered courts, six of which faced south and six which faced north, and contained in its center two pyramids, each 600 feet high. In each of these pyramids stood on a square base whose sides measured the same as the feet. As the height as did the pyramid caps, their volume will be 72 million square feet. The labyrinth itself contained 3,000 rooms, half above ground, half below, in similar fashion to the pyramids, half of which were submerged below the sacred lake, connecting underworld to otherworld, to overworld. Given that Herodotus' information about former times is often wrong, he may nevertheless have been reporting a genuine belief in his time that early dimensions mirrored celestial ones. The early surviving complete catalogue of the universe was compiled around 1100 BCE by Amenop, a scribe of sacred books, the books in the House of Life. He intended it to comprise everything made up of heaven with its affairs, earth, and was it what the mountains belch forth? What is watered by the flood? All things above which Re has shown, all that is grown on the back of earth. Amenope began his catalog with sky, followed by sun, moon and star. He then listed five constellations, only two of which can be identified. We can identify Sa, Orion, a man running while looking over his shoulder. From the characteristic three stars of its belt, figure as Osiris, crown, and Mshtu, or Mekshitu, the seven stars of Big Dipper, which the Egyptians saw as an ox leg, or sometimes as a whole bowl. That Amenope mentions neither any other constellations nor planets has been used to suggest that such celestial affairs may have been of far less importance to the ancient Egyptians than the terrestrial matters with which he was intimately involved. However, the fact that he also ignores Sirius suggests that either the catalogue is incomplete or that Amenope's possible personal disinterest in the sky was not representative of Egyptian culture as a whole. As far as we can tell, aside from the Deccans, a total of about 25 constellations were recognized and represented by animal and human figures in an abundance of sacred texts. There was the crocodile, the lion, a hippopotamus, and a bull's leg. It is also possible that their importance was related to regional and chronological variations in religious practice, also because representations of the Egyptian sky are always artistic or symbolic or inaccurate. We have only been able to reconstruct three constellations with any certainty. The few detailed pictures we have, such as those on the New Kingdom sailing of Senmut and Seti I, also show significant variations. We can assume that all the constellations were north of the ecliptic, although we do not know whether they were all circumpolar, indestructible. The one other Egyptian constellation we can identify with any certainty is Sopdet, later Sotis, known today as Sirius, which appears to be far part of a star grouping pictured as a recumbent cow. We're just not sure what the group of stars are represented by Rte or Rete. The hippopotamus, Nt, the ape and crocodile, or the despairing god. Also, there have been some tentative suggestions. The little crocodile may be Cancer, and man normally positioned in front of it could be Gemini, while the scorpion could approximate to Virgo and the hippopotamus may be our Draco. The lion may be Leo, though the majority disagree, while the sheep may occupy part of Capricorn and Aquarius. It is also possible that the sky was divided in two by the Milky Way, the winding or shifting waterway, rather than the ecliptic, the sun's path, as we later to be the case. Or that the Milky Way was itself the goddess, not with her mouth near Gemini, swallowing the sun as it crosses the Milky Way. We have no idea whether the constellations fulfill a divinatory role, although it must be unlikely that no religious or political significance was attached to a planetary transit, say, or the passage of a comet through a particular group of stars. It is difficult to imagine that for old kingdom cosmologists, the color of the sun or the shape of the moon had no significance, but the fact is that we have no hint of divination from the stars until the 20th dynasty, the era of the Ramses. Whether this was a period in which the monarchs were weak, leaving the priesthood of Amun-Re to control the state, it's unclear. Whether there was some influence from the Babylonians is also not known, though by no means impossible. Two of the powerful pharaohs who established the new kingdom in the mid-second millennium, Thutmosis II and Thutmosis III, launched campaigns of conquest in Syria, which extended their domains up to the Euphrates. At this point, it is almost certain that the lands they ruled had already adopted the astrological practices developed at Babylon and would have been familiar with the Mesopotamians' political cosmology. Although the empire collapsed under Akhenaten, control of parts of Palestine and Syria was reasserted by Ramses I, who came to the throne around 1319 and then lasted for around a century. That the coming of the new kingdom appears to have coincided with a cosmological revolution of which Akhenaten's reform was perhaps an extreme manifestation is also suggested by the fact that the planets also appear for the first time. Our earliest known portrayal of the planets, excluding Mars, is found in a painting in the tomb of Senmut, a high official in Queen Hatshepsut's court at Thebes around 1473 BCE. Other notable examples come from the tombs of the great imperial pharaohs Amenhotep III, Seti I, Ramses II, and Ramses III. The Egyptians knew the planets as stars that know no rest, and identified three, if not all, of them: Mars, Saturn, and Jupiter with Horus. Jupiter was Horus, who bounds the two lands, or Horus, who illuminates the two lands. And later, Horus, who opens mystery. Saturn was Horus, bull of the sky, or just Horus, the bull. Mars was Horus of the horizon, or Horus the Red, and while the last name is obviously purely descriptive, the first two suggest religious significance, and all three suggest that they were aspects of the sun god, or perhaps the universal god manifested in the sun. Pictorial Kili on the latest monuments, all three included some elements of a falcon's body. Mars, for example, may be a falcon with a human head or a serpent tail. Saturn may be bull-headed with a human or falcon body. And Jupiter may be completely falcon or have a human head. One of Venus' names, Crossers, or Star, which crosses, may refer to its habit, like Mercury, of moving back and forth about the sun, but we cannot be sure. According to Parker, we cannot even be certain whether the Egyptian knew that Venus, as morning and evening star, was one body, although it is probable that they did by the end of the second millennium, nor do we know why they portrayed it as a heron. Later, she was known as the morning star and given human form. occasionally two-headed or two-faced, and sometimes falcon-headed, implying a link with Horus. Faulkner, however, argues that the pyramid text, which identifying the pharaoh as both morning star and long star, that the former was Venus before dawn and the later Venus after dusk. Mercury's name, Sbij or Sebek, has not been translated, although an inscription of Ramses the VI set in the evening twilight. A god in the morning twilight also points to a religious role, as well as to a recognition that the planet is a single body. In spite of its distinct